Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome once again to Sage Crossroads, a unique broadcast that brings the finest sages that we know of from around the planet. I'm here with one of my co-hosts, Lucy Norwood, and our most special guest, Rasuli. And I've known Rasuli for several years, and we've become close friends through the years. Hi, Rasuli.
Hi, Ann.
It is so good to hear your voice again, and we have many, many questions to ask you.
Good morning, Rasuli. I want you to know I have so enjoyed those portions of the book. Oh, my goodness, you are such a gifted and talented gentleman.
Oh, thank you. This has been a work of love.
Well, undoubtedly, and that absolutely exudes from your writing. And I'm so excited just to be able to ask you some questions. Anne will ask you some questions. And to really come to understand the mind that is Rasuli and your history, your relationship with God, and your wonderful gifts and talents, I think it's going to be such a blessing to everyone.
I'm going to read an excerpt from your book. What page? I'm on page 71. And I'll read here. When thought is only mental or intellectual, it deals with analyzing and evaluating what has been gathered as information. It is like a cross-examination of all the evidence, and it uses reason to form a judgment based on facts. When thought is initiated and expressed from the heart, it offers unique ideas and creativity. The result is originality and a higher capability. Some mystics recognize it as divine intervention. Some people simply describe it as talent. The whole realm of creativity is outside the process of rational thinking. Creativity comes from a source beyond reason. It is the connection with the source that links everything together. If you want to know the source of the images appearing, look in the direction from which everything flows. Rational thought is powerless in front of love. Thought which stands in the way of love is scandalous and disgraceful, and it is an affront to the sacredness of life. Love does not recognize or acknowledge such thought. Rumi sees rational and self-righteous thought as being like a cane that is used only by those who are blind or handicapped. It is a deceitful imitation of the light, luring us in the wrong direction. And then you quote, love is without reason. Rationality is like a cane. Judgment needs a cane because it is blind. When love arrives, thought dies in its shadow. Love is the sunrise, while thought is only a flashing light. Beautiful, beautiful, Rasuli.
You know how I wrote this book? This is really interesting. Let me just share with you who Rumi is, not was. You see, among everyone in the history that I have come in to know, what I read about them, Rumi stands above all. Why does Rumi stand above all? Is because, see, what I read about what Christ said, it was written about 300 and something years after Christ. What I read about what Moses said, it's been years and years after what Moses said. What I read about what Muhammad said, like 80 years after Muhammad's death, what Buddha said, or anybody that in the history that I get back to knowing, it's been always after them, and there's been a lot of rewriting or explaining or what they said. Rumi is the most unique human being in that sense that 94,000 verses of poetry came through him. He never wrote down anything. He never wrote.
His son was with him. Is that right?
There were four people, four of his followers, that took down whatever came through Rumi. Four of his followers. One of them was his son, and there are other three. Now, we have all those four manuscripts because they were kept in the museum in Turkey from Ottoman period, and those are available. And when you compare these four manuscripts that were written at the same time by four different people, you see once in a while there is a word that was not heard properly by one of them when you compare with the other three. So Rumi's words are the only words throughout the history of mankind that has been directly delivered to us. Rumi never even stopped in the middle of delivering these words to say, what did I say? Where was I? Can you repeat that so I can continue it? No. There were times that he would be just dancing, and these poetry would pour out that he wouldn't even stop. It just goes on. One time, he was walking through a bazaar. It was a goldsmith's bazaar. And he heard this rhythm, this beat of hammering, you know, the metal. And suddenly these beats started building up into a rhythm for him. And he began to dance in the middle of the bazaar with the followers being around him and just on and on dancing, and poetry pour out like, you play these old LPs, you know, how it just turns, you know, whirls and the sound comes through. Same thing. He was whirling and the words were coming through. Three different shifts took place while he was still whirling and poetry was pouring out. Three different shifts, and then those times would say about 10 hours, 12 hours of
wow.
people, you know, working on something. So it must have been like something like 38 hours, some 40 hours of just whirling. It wasn't any time that he would even stop. For a moment, it was just pouring out.
Now, when you talk about dancing, what we see with the Sufis now, is that what you mean?
Exactly.
That type
Sufis
of dance?
Took that, yeah. Sufis took that.
You know
that,
what you're talking
whirling.
About, Lucy?
No, help me.
Would you describe that, the Sufi dance?
Yeah, this Sufi dance, which actually Rumi was the initiator of it, is called Sama. Maa is Sama. It's a dance that you connect the earth to heavens. So your right hand is up above your head, straight up, and the palm of the hand is open, and the palm is facing the sky on the right hand side. And
yeah.
on the left side, your hand goes down and it's pointing at the ground, okay? And you
mm-hmm.
begin to whirl, and you've seen the whirling dervishes. Goes on and on and on. And that dance is that, it's a dance that we allow that creative flow to come through us to spread it on earth.
Mm-hmm.
So with that dance, we bring in heavens to earth. We lose our identity. When you look at the dervishes, you would never remember any of their faces or any of their heights or anything. You just feel this whirling and whirling. And through that whirling, the connection takes place. If you go ahead and do that whirling, and you begin to whirl and whirl, it takes you maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes, depends on how thick your skin is, until you get into that creative zone. And after all these whirls, suddenly you start saying things that is different, drawing things that is different, writing things that is different, because you become that vessel. And that's how Rumi became that vessel to carry this whole energy. But who was Rumi, it doesn't really matter. It wasn't anybody He says it so beautifully himself in a poem that I want to share with you, if I may, because it really describes who Rumi was. Oh, friends, how can I be identified? I don't know myself. I'm neither a Christian nor a Jew, neither a Zoroastrian nor a Muslim. I'm not of the East nor the West, neither of the land nor the sea. I'm not from nature's mind nor from the revolving universe. I'm not of dust nor of water, neither of wind nor of fire. I'm not of the angels nor of earthlings, not of time nor of space. I'm not from India, nor from China, neither from Bulgaria, nor from Saksim. I'm neither from the kingdom of Iraq, nor from the land of Khorasan. I'm not of this world, nor of the next, not of heaven, nor of hell. I'm not of Adam, nor of Eve, neither of the Garden of Eden, nor of paradise. My place is placeless. My trace is the traceless. I'm neither of body nor of soul, for I am the soul of the Beloved. I have abolished duality from myself. I have seen the two worlds as one. One I seek, one I know, one I see, and one I call. The Beloved is the first and the last. The Beloved is the outward and the inward. I know nothing else but for the Beloved and from the Beloved. Filled with ecstasy from the wine of love, I have passed beyond the two worlds. Except for being a libertine and a drunk, I have no other existence. If I spend a moment in my life without you, I'm ashamed for that moment and that life. If I'm honored to spend a moment in my life with you, I would put both worlds under my feet and dance forever in joy. Oh, Shams of Tabriz, I'm so joyfully drunk in this world that except for songs of ecstasy and joy, I have nothing else to say.
My goodness.
That's Ruby.
My goodness.
You see, he says that I'm the soul of the Beloved. To feel that you're the soul of the Beloved, you would not hurt anybody. You would not even do anything that would be causing any kind of a wrong wave anywhere. Knowing that I am the soul of the Beloved. I got to learn about Rumi when I was 3 years old. My uncle was a Sufi mystic, and we lived in the same house that belonged to my great-grandfather, and the family lived in that. There were 42 rooms and quarters. And
wait a minute. How many rooms did you say? 42. 40?
Yeah.
Well, I will not. If somebody says, you have a large house, I'll say, no, I know someone that was raised in a 42-room house.
Yeah. And these rooms were interlocked, and they were just, it led into libraries. And now it's a museum. It was an amazing house. It's an amazing house. Anyway, my uncle's quarter.
How old is it?
The house is probably about, I would say, close to 200 years old now. And since my grandfather had passed away, my uncle sort of was like the father of, you know, father figure of the family. So there was a certain respect for him as a father figure. And I was the firstborn son in the family. So I was sort of taken under the wings of my uncle. And on the weekends, and on Fridays, which is like Sunday here for the, you know, Islamic worlds, Friday is the, you know, the weekend. On Fridays, the Sufis would come to my uncle's quarter, and he was not married, and they would sit around in this large room, and it was all with frescoes all around in the ceiling. And from 3 years old, I would just go, and I'd love that feeling of being in that room with these dervishes and these Sufis as they were going through Rumi's poetry and dancing and playing music and singing. And as a you know, child, I was lying on this carpet. It was wall-to-wall Persian carpet. And I was lying on the carpet looking up to the ceiling and seeing these images on the ceiling. And I was hearing these hymns of the Sufis and reciting Rumi's poetry. And with the hearing the recital and the music and looking at the ceiling, and I was seeing these images on the ceiling come alive. And so I was connecting this whole experience that has been running my life throughout with what, you know, the energy of Rumi was as the whirling dervishes and the Sufis were just sort of singing his poetry. So my nursery rhymes were poetry of Rumi and all this. I grew up with that feeling, that sensation of Rumi. And every verse that he has such a deep power and meaning that it's very difficult to translate. That's why it took me 14 years to do this book, Rumi Revealed. I had gone to school. I could read and write. And it was one of those, you know, weekends with the Sufis gathering around. And now I would be sitting with them in their circle. And their leader, that they called Baba, read one of Rumi's poems. And the way they were doing it, the leader would read and then everybody would sort of express what they felt about the poem, not to you know, describe what it, the meaning of it is or anything like that. It was their feeling of how they felt about that poem. And the poem was read, and they, one by one, they all said, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I couldn't get it. And it was, I was sitting there, it was my turn too, and I said, I didn't get it, just like everybody else. And when everybody was gone, my uncle called me and said, listen, not getting Rumi's poetry has different levels. The way that they don't understand it is different from the way you don't understand it. They're at a different level not getting the poem than you are. Years passed by, and now, still, after so many years of every day at least reading Rumi and Hafez, 4 or 5 of their poetry, I still read a poem and I don't get it.
Ah, I love it. It challenges you.
Yeah, it just, I'm just changing the level of my not understanding Rumi's poetry. Now I'm in different levels of not understanding Rumi's poetry than I was 10 years ago. And then on and on and on back there. It's just that I changed the level of not understanding his poetry. It's not that I could ever claim that I understand what Rumi's all about.
Razuli, do you actually pray and request help or things, or, I mean, help me understand. I mean, is Rumi that kind of entity for you, or do you pray and request anything of God? You know what I'm saying? How do you do that?
I don't ask anybody to help me. It's the power is within us. Let me tell you a story, okay?
Yes.
The story is about a man who was in search of God. So he got his backpack filled with the traveling materials and whatever he needed, and he started saying goodbye to everybody in his town and telling them that he was going to go and find God and put God in his backpack and bring him back to town.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody would ask, you know, I want to have a piece of God, and then just on and on, and they would give him something. So his backpack was filled with all of these goodies. So he would go and find God, and then he would fill God, you know, his backpack with God. He said goodbye to everybody, and he's got his backpack filled, and he's leaving town in search of God. A few miles away from his town, he sees a plant which is about a yard high. It's like a stick off the ground, very close to the road.
Mm-hmm.
And the man looks at the plant and looks at this and says, how sad to be next to a road and not being able to travel.
Mm-hmm.
How sad to be next to a road and not being able to move. The tree hears that. And the tree says, a disaster is when you move in search of something and you cannot find it.
Mm-hmm.
And the man looks at the plant and says, what do you know about search? You have no idea how great it is to be in search of something. You're stuck in mud in here and you cannot move. So you would never experience this beautiful feeling of going after something. And he moves on. He goes on and on, and months passes, and years passes, and years passes, and his backpack becomes empty of all the facilities and things that he had, and he cannot find God. And now he's got nothing in his backpack. It's all empty. He starts coming back home. On his way, a few miles before he gets to his town, he sees this tall tree next to a road, which is so beautiful with all these different fruits and flowers. And he looks at it and says, wow, that's fantastic. Let me sit in here and rest. And he leans against the trunk of the tree and he's eating some of the fruit. And he says, wow, how fantastic this tree is. And he doesn't recognize the tree, but the tree recognizes him.
Hmm.
So the tree says, oh, traveler, what do you have in your backpack? Let's share some. And the traveler says, I am ashamed to tell you that my backpack is empty.
Mm.
And the tree says, I know, you don't recognize me. Years ago you went by and your backpack was filled with all kinds of things, including your ego. And now it's all gone, and the greatest thing you've lost is your ego. Now you're ready to receive God in your backpack. And the tree pours an energy in his backpack. Suddenly he feels this amazing energy. Just suddenly he's a completely different person, and he is looking at the tree, and he says to the tree, "All these years I was in search of God, and I couldn't find God. And here, you're stuck in this mud in here. How did you find God?" And the tree says, "You see, you were in search of God outside yourself. You lost everything in search of God. I was in search of God within myself. And every moment, every day, I became greater and more powerful. And God just developed in me from sprouting out into this enormous tree that I am, because I was seeing God within me, inside me."
Yeah.
Not searching for God outside. Every time that I'm in search of anything, and God, of course, is everything, so anything that I'm looking for, even the color of paint or something, let's say I'm looking for a special orange color that I want to use on my, you know, canvas now, and I don't have it. And I look inside me to find that orange, and the power tells me to mix this much of the yellow and this much of the red to make that orange, and I make that. You see?
Mm-hmm.
That is the connection. My other way would have been to go and buy the orange in a store. Then I would have been a consumer. Then I'm not creating anymore. But because I make this orange myself, it becomes a unique orange. It becomes my orange. Mm-hmm. It becomes what I created, not what I bought from the store. And it becomes my identity, because I have connection with it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how God develops in us, and how we develop through the power, divine power of God.
Mm. What a wonderful story, first of all. Such wisdom.
I just came back a couple of days ago from my retreat. And during the retreat, somebody asked me, said, "How can I have some of your wisdom? Where can I find some of your wisdom?" And at the time, I was drinking tea as I was talking, you know, at people. And the cup was empty. And so I just gave it to her. I said, "Here it is. Take it." And she took this empty cup in her hand, and she looked at it. And I said, "You see, all of my wisdom is in your hand now. If you recognize it, then you connect with it. But if you don't recognize it, then it's an empty cup that you throw in the trash can." So it's really about recognizing the fact that everything that I want is in my hand, is with me. I'm going to read a Rumi poem again from the book.
And what page?
Shall I?
On,
is it okay?
Yes. And what page?
I'm going to go to page 121.
Alrighty.
Okay. That's under the chapter Spiritual Ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a lot of emphasis on really describing Rumi's concepts through the words of other mystics. So the way I do it, as you saw in the book, which is, by the way, coming out in December.
Yeah, where can we find it?
Yeah, the publishing company is Blue Angel Publications. And they're in Australia, a fabulous...
Say it again, please.
Blue Angel.
Blue Angel.
Blue Angel Publication. Yeah, Blue Angel Publications. They have some of my works already available. And Rumi Revealed is really the classic book that people could go back to it and get to the depth of the power that is within us through how the mystics are introducing their ways and how Rumi really brought all of these together through his poetry. See, Rumi's poetry was not being published until 1957. His poetry was only in forms of some single poems in the hands of the Sufis.
And here's the reason why this program, Anne, is so important, because to hear from a sage like Razuli, who has this, you know, wealth of this ancient knowledge, ancient wisdom, you know, we here in the West miss so much of that.
Yes.
And we do have the language barriers, which brings the conceptual barriers. But I think a show like this, where we can hear from you, Razuli, it's so important to help us catch up a little bit with, you know, the rest of the world somewhat.
This is why I put this Rumi Revealed together. The idea, why do I call it Rumi Revealed? Everybody knows Rumi already. What is this revealing situation that I'm talking about? See, what happened to Rumi, his poetry was published only around, you know, 1957, as I told you, for the first time. And it was only a very small numbers of people who got the book, and some burned it because of the, you know, the idea of what he's talking about could not, you know, was sort of anti some of the religious, you know, business, let's speak of. As time went by, Rumi was not accepted. None of the books, you know, and Persians have every book in Iran has many, many poetries of every poet, except for Rumi. Rumi's poetry, you cannot find it in the students' books or anything, because of his ideas would be a little bit, you know, anti-business of religion.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
What happened is, during the at around the turn of the 20th century, there was Nicholson, a British poet, who learned about Rumi and went and studied Persian and Arabic and translated one of Rumi's books, which is called the Masnavi. There are two books. One is Divan of Shams. The other one is the Masnavi. The Masnavi was translated very well by Nicholson, but it's sort of a old English, and it's not something that today's people would go for. So Robert Bly, the American poet, got a hold of this book by Nicholson, and he found some jewels hidden in those poetry. And one of his students, Coleman Barks, he's a good poet, he gave him the book and said, take these pearls out of these words. And that's what Coleman did. Coleman Barks took the translations of Nicholson and turned it into American sort of contemporary poetry. And that took off. Suddenly, Rumi in the 1990s, became known in America. And suddenly, through these poetry, which were just taken from a translation, not from direct Rumi's language, became what people know about Rumi. So Rumi in the West became known as a poet because Nicholson was a poet, Robert Bly was a poet, Coleman Barks is a poet, so, and many other poets, because they got to realize that Rumi is a poet, they began to read Rumi, write about him, you know, get again Nicholson's poetry translated and changed into today's language. And Rumi became more known and known and known as a poet. And now if you tell somebody Rumi, they say, well, he's a poet. And you can find his books in the poetry section. But to call Rumi a poet is like calling Jesus a lecturer. Poetry was a means of communication.
Yeah.
But the power was so far greater than poetry. He makes fun of poets all the way through. And he hated the philosophers.
How would you refer to him?
Yeah.
Rumi is what he said. He's the soul of the beloved. He is the reflection of divine power on earth. He expresses that in the most delicate love language that one can ever hear. And I want to finish this conversation on this poem from Rumi that I finished a book with. Let me say it in Persian. من غلام قمرم غیر قمر هیچ مگو پیش من جز سخن شهد و شکر هیچ مگو سخن از رنج مگو جز سخن گنج مگو گر از آن بیخبری رنج مبر هیچ مگو I'm devoted to love. Speak to me of nothing but love. Only talk of sweetness and light or say nothing. Don't talk about scarcity and pain. Speak only of abundance. If you have no awareness of it, don't bother. Say nothing. A beautiful madness took over me last night. Love whispered, I'm here. Don't cry. Don't tear up your robe. Say nothing. Oh, love, I said, I am worried about other things. There are no other things beyond love. Say nothing. I will reveal to you the secrets. Nod your head that you hear me. Except for that, say nothing. Love, like life, flows through the heart. Feel the thrill of the flow and say nothing. Oh, heart, I asked, what is this enchanting flow? This is beyond what you can grasp. Give it up. Say nothing. Is this mysterious attraction an angel or a human being? This is beyond angels and all beings. Say nothing. Tell me what it is. I'm losing my mind. Lose your mind. Lose your control. Say nothing. You are sitting in this house filled with phantoms and images. Move out. Let go of your obsessions and say nothing. Oh, heart, be like a gentle father. Isn't this the description of God? Isn't this the description of God? Yes, it is true. But promise me to say nothing.
That's incredible.
That's Rumi in deep. See, it's beyond poetry. It's beyond it. You get lost in this. It becomes like a morning shower that you don't count how many drips come on my head. You just drown in it. You just let that shower fill you with that energy, with that cleanliness, with that feeling. And this is how Rumi affects us. This is how he connects with us. And I'm so proud of having done this. That was labor of love for 14 years. And my good friend Naomi Stone, that I've never met in person. She's a wonderful mystic and a poet. Help aligning the poetry into poetic language that I wasn't familiar with when I started. And now I write my own poetry, thanks to Naomi, my good friend.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is the result of all of those efforts that
and you've
it's
never
coming
met
out,
her in person. I find that
no,
weird.
I have never met her in person. It's been
oh,
years that I've been spending nights with her, and I say, I'm spending night with this woman who is not even my wife. We just communicate. I read the poetry. I write. I say all of these in the phone. I don't write it down. Naomi, who is 2 hours ahead of me in Iowa, in a small town called Waterloo, and she writes down these, and then next morning when I come to my studio, she's put it in the email, and I review it, and I like parts of it. I want to expand on parts, and that's how this book that is available, 3 months, it would be, you know, under Blue Angel Publications, blueangelpublications.com as well.
Well, I was able to listen to the most fascinating remarks, and especially to call Rumi a poet would be like calling Jesus a lecturer.
I love it. That's like a classic.
We're down to 5 seconds, and God bless everybody. And Rumi Rasuli, you're going to come back with us on a reoccurring basis.
Yes.
Please.
Anytime.
Blessings
I would be available
to you,
Rasuli.
It's such an honor to spend these 2 hours with you. Thank you, my brother.
Thank you so
bye
much.
Bye for now, everyone.
Have a beautiful day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.